What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of your favorite basketball card podcast on the entire internet, Hobby Update. This is now episode number 9. My name is Max. You can find me on Instagram at Putnam Cards, and this is my good friend Shay. You can find him on Instagram at ShayWayVlogs. Shay, the most famous question of all time, how are you doing today?
¿Cómo estás? Muy bien. Thank you for joining us. I'm really excited to get this podcast started today. We have an amazing show, a very different show. So Max, my good friend, he keeps saying good friend. I like to call him partner, a life partner, a podcast partner. And we have a good show for you guys. Let's go.
Yep. All right. Starting per usual, card of the day. I guess I'll go first here. We've got, speak of the Slim Reaper, if that's what you want to call him. Yeah, the Kevin Durant, 2007 Tops, just regular base rookie PSA 10. Cool thing about this card is that this actually has a lower population than the Tops Chrome Refractor PSA 10. This is a pop of 129. The Chrome Refractor has a population of 188. So yeah, this is one of a few KD cards in my collection. I thought it was just a timely card to show right now.
Beautiful, excellent choice, especially with KD playing. Quick question of your card of the day. I know there's different variations of that. There's a white border, there's an orange border, and there's black border.
So the black border is the true pack pulled rookie. The white border came in these kind of rookie sets that were like not in packs.
Team sets.
Like
box sets or whatever.
Yeah. Same thing. So the black is the true rookie. The white is not the true rookie. And there are many more white PSA 10s than there are black PSA 10s.
Makes sense. Excellent choice. great choice. Unfortunately, my card of the day is also Kevin Durant. We had to pussy out because after KD's last night game, easy money sniper is back, guys. Everyone that doubted KD with the Achilles, he's not going to be the same. And don't get me wrong. Everyone that said Achilles injury is literally the worst injury NBA athlete could have. It's like a pretty much well-known fact. Nobody has come back stronger. Only one person, I believe, in the 70s or 80s came back. I think it was Isaiah Thomas, somebody from the Pistons, by the way, came back from Achilles injury better than before. And KD right now, what he did last night is defying his legacy. This is what makes KD market back to cards stronger. After watching KD's performance last night, do I want to sell this? I'm a collector at heart, guys. So do I want to sell this? No. I want to hold on to my KD card stronger because I'm loving what he's doing on the court.
Yeah, I mean, I guess now is a good time for some NBA talk, a little NBA talk. You know, there was a lot of news this morning coming out about the league. We've got Kawhi now out with an ACL injury. Who knows what the extent of that injury is, but that's not good news, obviously. And the Clippers were just hitting their stride. Kawhi was playing very, very well, and now they're just kind of slapped in the face with that. Now, I talked on the phone with you the other day. I said, look, I can't wait to go back and get that clip of me saying that the Clippers are going to win the title a couple podcasts ago. Now that's looking increasingly unlikely.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's unfortunate what's been happening with the, Kawhi down and then Chris Paul with some COVID positive test, even though he did get the shot. The vaccine. Yeah. And then, okay, I don't want to start this whole vaccine debate. I bet you we're going to get flagged because we mentioned COVID because the internet's crazy. We're gonna get flagged on YouTube. Anyways, he got the vaccine and then he got COVID. I don't know what to say to that. So, I mean, there's nothing else to say. It's a very unfortunate situation, to be honest.
Yeah. So you got CP3, you got Embiid and Donovan Mitchell both banged up. I mean, it's just a mess right now. It's a tough. You know, last night I watched Durant put up, the almost 50-point triple-double. I was so pumped. Oh, the NBA playoffs, I love this. I can't wait to watch. And then this morning, it's just everything that went wrong in terms of the playoffs and the NBA and all these teams. Now it's just survival of the fittest. Do you have healthy players? It really doesn't matter how well they play. Just are your guys healthy?
Right. Like, I just want, no matter what happens towards the end of the day, whoever wins, whatever team wins, whatever player accomplishes, I don't want there to be an asterisk mark next to that championship ring.
Asterisk.
Asterisk, whatever. I don't want that to be a mark on next to the ring. You know what I mean? So.
Right. It's no, man. Like, I mean, it's kind of like the bubble. Like, every team was on equal footing. Yeah. It's not like. Like, everyone's doing with the same crap. So,
bottom line, injuries are part of the game. So this is the game.
This year, more than ever, because of the shortened off season.
Let the best man win. That's it. Whoever wins, I give them full credit. That's it.
There you go. Okay. Now, like Shay said earlier, today's episode is a little bit different than the normal hobby update episode. Normally, it's kind of a rundown of the hobby news. You know, what's happening. This episode is a little different because we're doing a countdown of the top 10 most important basketball cards of all time. Shay and I have come up with a consensus list here. So we're going to be running down each card, why we think it's important, or one of the 10 most important cards of all time, why it kind of deserves to be on the list.
Yep, that's what we're doing. We're counting down the 10 most important cards that we think it's culturally relevant, importance into the hobby world, and just generally accepted by collectors in general. This is coming from a collector's side, not investment side. Just that notation.
Okay. I also think we're part some of these cards on this list just because they kind of define different eras of the hobby or define the hobby in general. So yeah, just think that's important to note. But I do want to give two honorable mentions first. First one that I wanted to put on the list, but there just wasn't space for it, was the 1957 Topps Bill Russell rookie. And then my second honorable mention would be the 2003 Topps Chrome LeBron James rookie. You got any ones that you kind of wanted to put on the list but couldn't?
Kaboom. Sorry.
Okay. You can't. You literally own the best Kaboom card possible, or one of them.
I'm not gonna say Kaboom, but yeah.
You just said it twice.
No more. Oh yeah, I promised I wasn't gonna speak about it. No, those are excellent honorable mentions. Yeah, they're not on the list, guys, but they're honorable mentions. Let's go.
Okay, starting off number 10, we have the 2018-19 Panini Prism Luka Doncic base card. Now, why did we include this as in the top 10 most important basketball cards of all time? Well, quite frankly, because this card kind of defines, it will be a defining card of the current era in which we're in now. It's an iconic pose, I guess, with Luka. He's the next guy in line here. He's a clear future MVP, future championship winner, hopefully. And this card has the second highest population of any basketball card out there.
Oh wow. I agree with everything you just said, but more importantly, this card made the top 10 most important cards in our list is because what it has done to the hobby in general. 2018 was a pivotal year in the hobby, a very important year in the hobby. And to be quite frank, I'm glad I lived and experienced it through the hobby world during that time. You know what the 2018 Prism, what it did to the hobby and Panini are going to be talked about years down the line. They rejuvenated collecting and the hobby. You know what I mean? Luka came in, he was the biggest star in 2018. You know, there was hype around and all that, but then he performed in such an amazing level, it got everybody into collecting. And it brought in so many new people in the hobby, a lot of them flippers, investors, whatever you want to call them. But you know me, I'm a huge fan of people coming into the hobby just to participate in any way. I love it. Speculating, buying the base, buying crazy cards, paying outrageous. Bottom line, there's action. 2018 Prism Luka, that era brought a lot of new eyeballs and action into the hobby. And, you know, then you have obviously Gary Vee and all the influencers and all that. But bottom line, that's why, even though the card is very common, yes, we understand that, crazy hype pop. But what it did for this hobby and what it will continue to do long term, when we look back, definitely it's going to be an important card.
Without a doubt. Now some people may say it's crazy that you put this card on the top 10 most important basketball cards of all time list, because Luka himself to date hasn't really done much. He hasn't won an MVP. He hasn't won a title. He's made a couple all NBA first teams. He's made the all-star team, rookie of the year. But outside of that, like, you're telling me this card, this guy is on the top 10 most important basketball cards of all time list?
Because there's more depth, layers of depth to this card. Literally, what it did to the whole collecting and the hobby community. I know for sure many people came in to the hobby and stuck with it because of Luka, the player, and Prism being the number one coveted, beloved set. So that's why 100% that card has to be in any top 10, I think. It should be a mention for sure.
There you go. All right. Next card.
Number eight. What we got? The 19th.
Number nine. Awesome. We've only done one. You've already lost track. Not a good sign. But number nine.
Number nine. We have number nine. The 1948 Bowman George Mikan rookie.
Okay. Yes.
Yep. Milkman.
No, Mikan. George Mikan. You got to get that. Don't call him Mikan.
Yo, that's
George Mikan. Respect. You got to respect George Mikan.
Dude, when you want to do a podcast with the immigrant, this is the type of stuff you're going to get randomly. That's the truth.
Okay. You know what? I apologize, but it's George Mikan.
George Mikan. You should have took that one. But yeah, George Mikan we have as number nine, and you're a big fan of this card. So you can see why it's number nine.
Yeah. I do want to kind of give a quick little shout out here to Yamwax for really kind of turning me on to this card, explaining to me its significance and the importance of it. But this card is kind of where the basketball card hobby started. This was part of the first national basketball card release. George Mikan, one of the key players at the time, probably the key player at the time, the best player from that era, that initial era of basketball. And some people think that this card is kind of like the Honus Wagner of basketball cards.
Okay.
And there's only 317 graded copies. There's actually a couple more copies that have been graded, but they have like weird print defects or something like that. But 317 copies is kind of the number that is thrown around.
Interesting facts. I'll be straight on, like straight up and straight honest. I can't even name one. I don't even know what team this person, this player played in. I can't even remember you know what I mean? Like, to me, it's not culturally as relevant. Am I interested in buying this card? No, but it does make the list because of the significance of what you just mentioned. You know what I mean? Where it all started. First ever basketball card produced, period. That definitely holds an importance into the hobby. And you can, why, like, if you don't care about it, if a new person blindly doesn't know anything, is successful, let's say a billionaire wants to come in, somebody that has money but very, very smart, Harvard grad, all that nonsense, right? And it's like, yo, I want to dip my toes in. That person is so easily, you can sell that story of this is the first ever basketball card, period, that it's going to ring a bell to any normal person in the world. Okay, that seems kind of important, right? Just that fact into this, even if you don't know who he is, you don't care about it, it's still some sort of importance into the history and the importance in the hobby. That's why we decided to throw it in.
Hey, would you want to own the Honus Wagner?
I if I had the money, I would rather put it in elsewhere. But
okay, you respect it. You respect that card.
1,000,000,000% I respect it. And you know,
you don't know shit about Honus Wagner.
I know that's tobacco. He didn't want to the cigarettes and the kids smoking, so it was very limited. I know the story behind it, and remember, the hobby, we love stories.
It's a narrative. It's a game of narratives.
It's a game of narrative. Let the best narrative win, not let the best man win. Let the best narrative win.
There you go. Okay. So
all
I guess
all the bullshitters, stand up. We'll just leave it at that.
All right, I guess I'll go number eight. Number eight, the 2009-10 National Treasures Stephen Curry RPA out of 99. 2009-10 being the first release of National Treasures, kind of replacing Exquisite as that kind of big, like luxurious kind of card brand And this is really NT today is still Panini's main kind of high end product. Correct. We always think about, you know, the RPAs from NT, Curry being generational player, a player who changed the game, maybe forever. So a key player in the history of basketball from a key release in the history of basketball cards. And the card itself is a very clean design. The only thing that bugs me a little bit about it is that I did take a look at the back of the card. It's event worn.
Fuck!
It's an event worn patch. Why do they have to do this to us?
That's why the NT to me personally is basically everything of a perfect card of the most high end product. You got it. You won. But then there's flawless. They got the game worn. You know what I mean? The same type of clean, sexy, very easy to understand look, you know, the RPA and all that. But then the only reason is the NT comes out before flawless. So that's why we get it. But just figure it out, man. You know what I mean? Panini, like, you know, this is your flagship product and you know, put the game worn in there. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only my sad takeaway. I love the fact that it's out of 99. You know what I mean? Like that's always cool. Curry, if that's, you know, when you look back in history, Curry, generation talent, what you just said, he changed the game. He literally made threes a thing. You know, you have Giannis shooting threes left and right just because of Curry. I bet you if you ask him, he's going to be like, blame Curry. That's why I'm shooting these threes. But literally, he changed the game. He basically said, there's a better, like, efficiency rating, however you want to describe it. The odds are better of you shooting a three than taking that Jordan jump shot. You know,
not even just a three. Not even just a three, like a 40-foot three.
Okay, he's being crazy right now. I know, that's why. But bottom line, it's Curry. It's first year NT. That helps, you know what I mean? And Curry is a generational talent. We all know the reasons why. Even if you're not in the hobby, I think NBA analysts and just general public will confirm and say that Curry changed the game.
Yeah. I just want to kind of point out the elephant in the room here. We have we got the siren in the background.
Oh, fuck. Yeah.
We got the New York City living. It happens.
Just a side tidbit. I live next to a huge hospital, Mount Sinai Hospital. So God forbid, you know, you don't hear from me for a few days. Call Mount Sinai and be like, yo, Shane in the hospital.
All right, moving on. So far we have number 10, the Luka Prison Base, number 9, the Mikan 1948 Bowman, 8, Curry NT RPA, and what is number 7?
Number 7, we got, I don't know if that's your thing, but the 1980-81 Topps Magic Johnson Larry Bird with Julius Erving rookie card.
This card, obviously an incredible card. You have a unique design, which at the time was kind of a wild thing. You had the three kind of columns on the one card, right? Then you have that card and you put those three players on it, two of which no one knew at the time, but would go on to be top 10 players of all time, Hall of Famers, two players in Magic and Bird that defined an era of the NBA, an era of basketball. And I think the fact that that card has a low PSA 10 pop, only 24 copies have been graded a PSA 10. I think that actually does help it out a lot.
That card is literally becoming so iconic. All those three players are.
It's so becoming great. So iconic, or
I feel like personally in the last few fights in this big run up in this boom in the hobby. The card, if you want to call it, is climbing the ladder of, like, greatness. It's always been good, but definitely more eyes on it. And now that we're talking about it, these new collectors are, like, saying, like, oh, wow, these three legends, one card. You know, remember what we said, the narrative is building stronger and stronger. So, I that card has interesting upside. It's important for many reasons. And, yeah, that's it.
I'm going to be straight up. That card... That was I had that card raw when I was like 12 or 13. I bought it for like $100 or something. And even when I was 12 and 13, almost a decade ago at this point, I recognized the importance of that card. So I don't know. I actually disagree with you. I don't think it's like becoming iconic or the legend of it is growing. I think that that card is a staple in kind of the history of basketball cards, and I think it'll always be valued.
Great. I like that you said that. You're a lot younger than me, and a younger collector, even you said 10 years ago, whatever it was when you were picking it up, like you were already interested, and the fact that you put real money, hard-earned 12-year-old, 10-year-old money to buy this triple rookie card, that means that shows your confidence. And remember, guys, the younger generations are the future of the hobby. These old dogs, when they die, their thesis and their narrative dies with them. That's a joke. And the new collectors and all that, you know, we define what's important. Remember, this is a hobby. This, your cards are only worth what somebody else is willing to pay for. There's no value in any of these things. If the story makes sense, if you give a very strong narrative why something is worth something, and if you get a big amount of people to believe in it and you know, agree with it, chances are that card's going to do well. So let's just leave it at that.
I want to add one more thing, though. To all the people who are like, oh, my God, this idiot, he thinks he bought that card for $100 raw when he was 13. Yeah, I did. And it had print marks all over it. It was a disgusting-looking copy. But that's how much that card was back then. So I don't want to hear any nonsense about it. He bought a fake card or whatever. That's a garbage take. Get out of here with that.
Okay, quick defense, you know, but great.
Yeah, just had to put that out there.
You know, I'm learning new things about my partner every day, and I know at 10 years old, he's buying fucking, you know, 1980s cards. I'm like, wow. Okay.
All right, moving on. Number six, take it from here.
Number six is one of a dream card for me. I'll be very frank. It's 2012 Prism Gold. Set LeBron James out of 10. That's that card we value it at number six. If you want to take on, I'll add on after.
Yeah, I'll take it. I mean, some people may be kind of surprised that it's number six. The numbers we're ranking at the number six most important basketball card of all time. But I think when you really kind of stack up what makes this card special, what makes it important, I think it's deserving. You know, the inaugural Prism release, 2012 Prism being one of the most noteworthy sets of all time. And it's only been, 9 years, 10 years since it was released. So imagine the significance of 2012 Prism 20 years from now. You know what I mean? Look, it's the gold, only 10 copies. The gold parallel from 2012 Prism was the only numbered parallel from that year. It's actually funny. I looked up the pop report. The card has been graded. There's only 10 copies. Remember this. The card's been graded 11 times by Beckett, none by PSA. And the last, sale, was this year, sold for $585,000. And that is the only public sale, I believe, since 2014.
Wow. That's the biggest takeaway from what you just said that I heard right now. None graded by PSA?
None.
Wow, Nat Turner is probably pissing his pants right now. Maybe we all know he won that. The record number you said for 585K, I believe it was Nat Turner, did end up purchasing that 2012 gold Prism LeBron.
I don't know.
Don't quote me, but I don't know. I feel like that was the case. Shit, no editing. Fuck it, we keep it real. Yeah, I'm pretty confident. Nat Turner bought the 2012 gold Prism. Anyways, that card. Look, why the hell is a Prism card again? This is the second appearance of a Prism card. Did you realize that?
That brand is ingrained into the hobby at this point.
2012 Prism. What Prism did to the whole entire community, and the fact that, okay, few takeaways, why that card is so big. The fact that this Panini card that's gold and it's Prism and it's out of 10, not like Topps Chrome, out of 50 and out of random weird numbers. I'm a true purist, and I always see a card that's labeled gold, I want to see slash out of 10. That's when I think of gold, not gold wave, not gold hallucinations. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, like a true gold should be out of 10. And let's just, a one of one is always a one of one, right? Whatever. That's a stupid example. But a gold, we want to keep a lineage. You know what I mean? Because in the hobby, we love lineages. We want to keep all golds out of 10. We want to keep true RPAs and all that nonsense out of 99. You know what I mean? Give everybody
a shot. Are you shitting on my grill?
No, dude, you're not out of 99. You're out of 50. But that's top chrome. That was back in the day. No. Trust me. I'll do anything for that grill. It's a nice card. But they kept it. You know, Panini made the golds out of 10. Very hard. Nobody liked the product. And now the product has become what it is today. The flagship brand of Panini is Prizm. When I say flagship, meaning that not the most expensive crazy cards, but like the most widely accepted, the most beloved in the hobby is Prizm cards. Like, show me a Prizm color and all that. So that's why we had to go with the inaugural edition. And LeBron happens to be in the set, and it's gold, and it's out of 10. There's no freaking records. It's a card that has a crazy history of nobody wanted this shit. You know, nobody wanted to buy Prizm blasters at, you know, Walmart for like $20 a whole box where you can pull a gold. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's why we had to throw in. Prizm is just so important to the hobby. The gold is so beloved. Don't quote me. I'm pretty sure Nat Turner bought that card. I don't know why it's hitting me, but I feel like I heard it or read it somewhere. But yeah, that card is 2012 Prizm Gold is definitely a very important card in the hobby.
Yes, and I just want to say two more things about it. There's, out of all of the copies that have been graded by BGS, which is all of them, I believe, there's one BGS 10. I'd love to see what that card would do at auction. You think that's a million-dollar card?
At this point, it has to. But look at what you just said. We haven't seen a sale of this card in so long.
Until this year, recently.
Yes. But the last sale was 2014, right?
And then almost it sold 6 or 7 years.
Right. That shows this is a card collectors have set it with their wallets, because no matter the price and the run-up, they want to hold this card no matter what. They like this card has crazy upside, because anybody that owns it, you got to fight me to get this card. I'm going to fight to the death. Those are the cards, you know, that are important, are rare. And, you know, guys with big wallets talking, even the regular people that just collect silvers and colors, they know that gold Prizm, oh shit, you know, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
So let's just leave it at that.
There's also a video on YouTube of someone pulling 2012 gold Prizm LeBron. And then he was doing like a case break recap or something. He was like, yep, here's a gold LeBron. So that's on YouTube. It's pretty
Please
epic.
Please send me that link. I've never seen that. I would love to see that.
Trust me. All right. Moving on. Number five, the 1996-97 Topps Chrome Kobe Bryant rookie refractor. 1996 Topps Chrome being the inaugural year of Topps Chrome, coincidentally being Kobe's rookie year. The refractor is beautiful. I understand that Finest came first in terms of the chromium product, but chrome has really lasted the test of time. Finest has too, but chrome in almost every scenario outsells Finest. So I think that this just being Kobe in the first year of Topps Chrome kind of makes it deserving of the fifth most important card of all time.
Yeah, great explanation of why we chose number five. And to be honest, everyone, I'm being a Kobe guy, I wanted to rank that card lower, and Putnam had to fight me, and we had to compromise to get this list in order.
Well, the debate was whether that should be ahead of the 2012 gold Prizm LeBron. I said it should be, because Prizm wouldn't be what it is without Topps Chrome. Chrome set the standard. It kind of, you know what I mean? Like, Prizm wouldn't have the same allure if it wasn't for Topps Chrome. That's how I view it.
Very strong, fair point. That my only, because look, I like playing the bad guy, devil's advocate, whatever you want to say. The only thing that I would say is that, okay, 96 Topps Chrome, right? Legendary product. Like, that's what we know right now, right? Topps Chrome. Oh my God, you got Topps Chrome? Oh my God, I'm like licking my chops. I get it. But 1993 Finest was officially the first type of chromium refractor product, right? Okay, we'll leave it at that. That was what, 1993, right? Three years later, you know, they want to create a product tops chrome. Great. For not the first chromium shiny refractor. Remember, 93 Finest did have a refractor version, so you can't even take that away. So they got a base and they got a refractor for 96. Okay, so you've had a product out for 3 days and it's all tops, remember. So it's the same company. We have tops, finest, 93, finest, refractor, blah, blah, blah. And then 96, they want to create a new brand, maybe because of Kobe, whatever the case is. But this 96 tops chrome card could have been so much higher in the list. It would have blown a lot of, why? They fucked up. Why? Because if this card was serial numbered, it would have been huge. If it didn't have that weird greening type bullshit nonsense issue, it would have been another step up. You know what I mean? So just because the hobby, or not the hobby, like the company's kind of like dropped the ball in a sense of not like, you know, going real at it, it would have been way bigger. And lastly, in 1996, they did have serial numbered cards. The credentials was a serial numbered Kobe card out of 599. Tops should have made the refractor version some sort of a serial number, and that would have like magnitudes importance in the hobby if they would have done that. So
I was thinking about that today a little bit. Like, what if that card was serial number? Even if it was out of like, even if it was like 5,000 or something.
Doesn't matter. Yep.
Yeah, but I do think that card in the first year of Topps Chrome kind of set a standard for the hobby, a new standard. And that's why I thought it was deserving of being number five.
You know what's interesting? I feel like certain players that come into manufacturer's new product line, and that player turns into like some absolute phenomenal, you know, is then that set or something becomes
right
in that level.
Like, yeah, I agree.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think that card, and we did look this up because we were debating Finest and Topps Chrome a little bit as well. We looked up the price of the 1993 Finest Michael Jordan Refractor PSA 10 versus the price of the 1996 Topps Chrome Michael Jordan PSA 10. Now, obviously, what we learned was that the population for the Topps Chrome is much lower than the OG Finest. Nonetheless, the Topps Chrome Jordan first year refractor outsells the Finest like every time. So the hobby kind of values Topps Chrome, the first year of Topps Chrome more than the first year of Finest. And so that kind of factored into our algebra a little bit as well.
Very well put. That was a silver lining where we're like, yo, this card is definitely belongs, you know, somewhere.
Yeah. All right, moving on. Number four, take it.
Number four, we have the 97-98 Michael Jordan or PMG red / green set. We think that's the number four most important card in the hobby. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think 1997 Metal Universe is the most beautiful creative set of all time. The unique designs of the cards, the fact that the PMGs literally shine, like it's not a chromium card, but they glow. They're just crazy looking cards. And to me, out of all the 90s cards, and I mean, I wasn't even alive during this era of the hobby, but out of all the 90s cards, the PMGs kind of epitomize that era for me. You know, you have the great design and you have the serial numbered cards. And I don't know, it's just, it represents the 90s for me. And that's coming from someone who didn't live, you know, during that time period.
Okay, so if you noticed our list, I believe so far that's the only parallel that we have on the list, right?
Well, aside from you got the LeBron gold.
The LeBron gold. Okay, yeah. Okay, I get that. But okay, what the PMG did is created a chase. I remember when it first came out, PMG, no matter what, if you're in a hobby shop ripping the 97 Metal Universe box or where you were, you knew if you got one of those red PMGs or green, you knew you hit the mother load and it was a big deal. You know what I mean? Even at that time. So even at that time, it was beyond coveted. To where the card is now is absolutely crazy. Few reasons why. There's a green. You already mentioned it looks beyond wild. Condition sensitive. It's the greens out of 10. It's a parallel of a parallel. You know?
And the condition doesn't even matter that much.
Exactly.
That's when you know the card is very important. When literally people get amped up, it pumped to get a PSA 3 or a 4 of an a 90s card.
Altered card.
An authentic altered card.
I think that was altered, right? The one that Nat won for 300K or something.
I don't know. It's authentic.
Authentic. Yeah, I believe it was altered for some reason.
And that card, I just want to say that PMG green, the last sold for $915,000. And the card ladder predicted value of that card today. Take a guess. What do you think it is?
That's a very, very, you threw me off here. I would assume it's over a million, at least.
The card ladder predicted value, which many times are very much on point, is $3 million.
Holy smokes. Wow. Okay, just an extra tidbit. We got those card ladder guys on our next
episode. Hey, whoa.
No,
hey.
We gotta throw it in. We gotta throw it in.
Listen, fine.
We gotta next hype week, it up. No.
You know what? Fine. I'll be the hype master. Next week, boom, 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 boom. We got the card ladder bros on the pod. Josh and Chris. Christina. We want to get Christina. Fortunately, she won't be on, but the two guys will be. We just wanted to have Christina on the podcast. She was the main target, but we had to settle for Josh and Chris. But they'll be on the podcast next week. It's gonna be lit.
If we would have just had her, we would have got all the dirt on Chris Hodge and Josh Carver Chronicles. We would have gave you the full 311. But whatever. Anyways, next week's episode is gonna be wild. But $3 million, very interesting. And you know what's crazy is that from what I've seen, they've been kind of pretty accurate in terms of the predicted value. So I do respect that. You know, they have a little bit of a track record now where, you know, I'm like, okay, all right, you guys, you know, you're doing your thing.
And one thing I have noticed from looking at some of the predicted values is that a lot of times on the more rare cards, they undervalue them, or the predicted value is way under what, for instance, the last sale was. So I don't know, maybe it could be more than 3 million, but that's what the predictive value is today. The Michael Jordan Green PMG.
If you're running a company, imagine we own Card Ladder. I'd rather be in a position of being under predicted and then, you know, and then it blows
and
it
over deliver. Yeah, yeah.
Then like saying it's 10 million and goes for like 50,000. You're like,
right.
Yo, you're an idiot, bro. But that's not the case. So, you know, they're building a pretty good track record. You know, we'll have those guys on next week. And you know us, it's going to be good. We have a lot of things in plan. So it should be.
And it marks the 10th episode of the Hobby Update podcast next week and the 1 year anniversary of Card Ladder. So it's a loaded episode. Stay tuned for next week. But we got to finish out this list here. Number 3, you got it.
Again, me? Okay, sure. Number 3, we have the 97-98 Upper Deck game jersey, Michael Jordan, the auto version.
Yeah, out of 23. So, look, quite frankly, I didn't know what this card was until this year. I wasn't born for a lot of these cards on this list, but for some reason, that card kind of it escaped my knowledge. And I think it's partly because it's out of 23. It's not like a super abundant card. It sells once in a while, right? So it's not super visible to someone who's not incredibly ingrained in the hobby or from that time or was collecting during that time period. But nonetheless, the first it was the first like Jordan memorabilia autograph card, right?
So here's the thing.
Okay, you know what? Take it from here. I don't know shit about this card.
It's totally fine. That's why I'm doing a podcast with Max. I know
I'm sitting down. I'm a little student right now. I'm at my desk. Teacher Shay.
No, I'm learning from you, man. You got old. Okay.
Mr. Shay, please teach me.
Enough sucking. You know, enough. enough. Okay, let's get back to the card. You're no student, no master. I'm no one's master. You're not my student. I'm not your master.
Stop okay, hey, master. Hey, stop saying master. You brought the whole master thing in here.
You I said student. I'm said, learning. Shay. I'm thinking master, and I'm Shay. The oldest
fetish. All right, Shay, tell me why this card is number three on Jeez, the list here. Because man, if I had it originally at like five or six, but and you had it on your original list as number one. So please tell me why.
Okay, it's so
such an important card.
Do you think so? Okay, just a quick background. You know, I don't want to like. Okay. By the way, low key, very straightforward. I don't own any of these cards in this list. By the way, Putnam, do you own any of these cards in this list?
Just, yeah, I own one.
Do you want to say it publicly, just so transparent?
No, because we haven't reached. We haven't got to that card yet.
Oh fuck! You're up to wow. We're up to number five. What number?
Three. Jordan game jersey.
And you have a card above that. Okay, quick little hype for you. But anyways, 97 game jersey, extremely important card in the hobby. Many reasons, but I'll just say the few things. The most like the flashing headlines. The most expensive Jordan, Michael Jordan card. Period, is the 97 game jersey. 97 game jersey card was like very important in many reasons. It's the first ever game used jersey card, right? That's already whoa in the hobby in 1997. Big, 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 huge deal. And just to add that, it's not a common card. The pack odds, you're going to throw up when you find out the pack odds. You're literally going to vomit and you're going to be like, this doesn't make sense. I don't have the exact numbers, but I feel like it's like one out of like multi thousand packs. It's stupid. Second of all, they made a steroid version of a crazy wild card. What is that steroid version? Version is the autograph version. You have the first ever game jersey card, and then you throw in Michael Jordan's autograph on it. That's a big deal. And that's why that card sold for, I think, like what, 1.5-2 million or something ridiculous.
Yeah, right near $2 million and on May 22nd. And that was a PSA 8, 10, or 9 auto.
Exactly. And just a little side thing, the 1997 game jersey, the way they made it was so nonchalant, right? Upper Deck, is that they cut up the game used Jordan jersey card from the 92-93 All-Star game, I believe.
Yeah, 1992, right? All-Star game.
Right. So when they cut up that card, they didn't even know what they were doing. They put in patches, you know, logos from the jersey into cards. You know what I mean? And they didn't specify it's a patch or it's like a big deal. You know, obviously now we know when we see a three color break on a freaking card, we're like, oh shit, we're going to value that more. But back in the day, it wasn't the case. They just cut up the jersey, throw in mad cards, and then years later, a lot of people question, yo, is this real? Is this a patch swap and all that? No, guys. Upper Deck even admitted, they already said it, that they torn the whole jersey. There's a lot of patch versions, and that's why the patch versions of the 97 game jersey command so much premium. You know what I mean? Just, and it may not say this, you see the patch jersey or whatever, but you can see why. So all those stories and theories just makes it so much more interesting. I want it. I want to chase it. So you have two things. You have the first ever game jersey, and then you have the first ever game jersey patch auto. You know what I mean? And Michael Jordan did it. And lastly, it's Michael Jordan's playing year, 97. Like, what else do you want? I hype up the card so much. If I ever get a chance to get it, you know, I'm probably going to be just shooting myself in the mouth. But
yeah. All right. I get it now. I get it. And we're going to make the last two cards kind of quick here because it's pretty self-explanatory in my opinion. But number two, 1986 Fleer Michael Jordan rookie card. Yeah. Look, when you've got a card, a piece of cardboard, a basketball card on shirts, on sweatshirts, you kind of know it's an important card. People who are not in the hobby know about this card, have seen this card, understand the significance of this card. It transcends the hobby itself, okay? Some people say, you know, a lot of collectors say there's a lot of these out there. I don't really have an interest in owning this card. I can go get one anytime I want. I understand that. But there's just something about owning this card it feels like as a collector, you kind of have to have one. I personally have a PSA 9 and I'm not really planning on selling it anytime soon. And I really love the card. It's culture.
I wanted to rate that card a lot lower in the list, but Putnam had to fight me. And, you know, obviously he made his points across where we had to kind of shuffle and put this in this position. But what he said, obviously, they're all facts. It's just an important card. The greatest player of the game, no matter what you want to say, LeBron or Jordan, doesn't matter. But Jordan's always in the conversation. You know what I mean? So he's up there. And that's his only true pack pulled rookie card. Like, I wanted to fight him in this statement because, you know, the star rookie was his original technically first rookie, but it was in team bags and all this weird bullshit setup. You know what I mean? But this was official Fleer pack pulled star. And like, the star's not around. Fleer somehow still around. So like, it makes it more culturally relevant, all that. Plus it's a dope photo. You know, it has things going for it, but you know, it is what it is. So
yeah. So let me just I want to get all the entire audience here, whoever's listening to this, whoever's nice enough to still be listening. Shay really hates this card for some reason. Let me tell you, he sent over his initial list. He had this card number 6 on the list of 10, and he had the Magic Bird rookie ahead of it. Now, how you could possibly put that Magic Bird rookie ahead of the Michael Jordan Fleer, it blows my mind. I saw the list. I said, how am I doing a podcast with this guy?
For
crazy many reasons, person.
It's not his true real rookie card for Jordan. Look, now I don't want to say all the – by the way, the Jordan PSA 10 did 180K last night, PWCC. We didn't talk about that, but I'll just talk about it right now. Guys, it was a 3-day flash auction. Flash auction, not a premiere or anything. So no buzz, no write-up. It was just thrown there, and it was 3 days. And also, I found out that a lot of people couldn't bid because their eBays were set up to accept like $180,000 bids. You know what I mean? Like, we get it. Like, everybody that wanted to actually participate and bid on it didn't get that opportunity. So when you limit the pool of buyers, you're going to get a lower comp. So that's just defending this card, which I don't own, full transparency. And you do own PSA 9, but I don't care. I had it way lower. But that's just the facts of what happened with this card. It's Jordan's third year. Now the shit process. It's Jordan's like third or fourth year card, 84. What is that? 87, 86, whatever. It's like, it's not even, but the only reason it's important is because it's pack pulled and it's Fleer and all that. And it's a nice photo. But, you know, like, I wish if that card would have probably been number one, if somehow that card came out, literally Jordan's rookie year. It would have meant and been valued so much more in terms of collectors and in the hobby, and especially somehow being pack pulled. It would have been number one card, like literally of all time, always. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So that's just.
I mean, I do agree. If it did come out the rookie year, it there'd be more to it. But nonetheless, I think it's the second most important basketball card of all time. So yeah, I kind of put my foot down there. Shay, I'm sorry. Your opinion is respected, but I believe it's also wrong.
Okay, it's fair. That's why we agree to disagree.
All right, and number one, what we think is the most important basketball card of all time is the 2003-04 exquisite LeBron James RPA out of 99. This card changed the hobby. It changed the hobby. In my opinion, the second greatest player of all time at this point. I mean, just it's a rookie card. It's the first year of the most luxurious high-end brand that will ever be created, in my opinion. Only 99 copies. I mean, I get that it's event worn or whatever, you know, it's not game worn, but still the card design is incredible. And yeah, I think that's the most important basketball card of all time.
Unfortunately, I agree. I don't like agreeing, but the LeBron RPA, actually, that card was not number one on my list. And I'm a LeBron guy, guys. Like, if anybody knows, like, that's who I PC, LeBron, Jordan, Kobe, whatever. But that card wasn't on my top number one list. I actually had the 97 game jersey, if I had to choose, as the number one list. But, you know, we have to compromise, whatever. What the LeBron what the 2003 exquisite rookie LeBron rookie patch auto did is they invented the term RPA. The term RPA came from that card. Big shout out to Carvin, by the way. Really cool dude. He freaking invented, you know, this exquisite shit. By the way, we'll get him on this show eventually in the future. So, like, stay tuned for that. But, and he will definitely explain this card 10 times better than me since he freaking made it. You know what I mean? I think that would be a great fucking guest, to be honest.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's a whole nother story. It invented the word RPA. We didn't even know what the freak RPA is, but the few negatives that we really know how important it is LeBron's best card, all right, all that good stuff. It's out of 99. What we collectors truly value a card out of 99 and out of 10. Those are the two most important numbers that for me, if okay, well, what?
Well, I was just saying 101. I mean,
okay, 101 is like it's a whole new league. It's like you name your own price. It's like I like cards where I want other people to have it.
Right.
So it's a club. You know what I mean? If there's a gold, it's exclusive club, a 10. If it's an RP out of 99, okay, we all love that LeBron player. Oh, you got one. I got one. We're in that exclusive club.
Right. There's enough of them where you can have a club, and there's so few of them where, like, it makes it a lot of people so scarce.
Right. Yeah. A lot of people want to join that club. Right. But it's a club nonetheless. You can't have a club with the 101, right?
That's a good point.
Of a certain card, to be very, very frank. Not like 20 different 101 cards, but you get the point. But anyways, they invented the RPA. The only negative takers, look, they had the limited logos, Game Use. And it came out on the same freaking product. Why the fuck didn't you put some Game Use? Change the language on the back of the card or RPA, not event worn, Game Use. Use the actual Game Use piece in there. Then it's like, almost like a perfect card. I know, like, there's
all these every time, all these designers and the card companies, they get so close to the perfect card, and there's just one piece. There's one piece of the puzzle that's missing. It's the most frustrating thing ever.
That's exactly hit on the dot. All these cards, we all have a little bit of, because we're all collectors, right? I know you're a collector. I know I'm a collector. So, like, if we have that little itch, oh, why don't you just do it this way? Oh, you're so close. You had it, guys. You
had it. Upper deck, you almost and had nonetheless, it. Nonetheless, these companies can make these mistakes, and the cards will still end up on the top 10 most important cards of all time list.
Dude. We have no choice. It's their cards. No right. matter what they do, they can print out shit. All they're printing out is shit. One of those shit cards is gonna be in that list. If it's a billion shit cards, we're gonna have 10 shit cards on that list.
But they can put a LeBron rookie bathroom used piece of shit in a card, and it would be on this list.
Yeah, that would actually be some crazy 101
with DNA. Okay, all right, moving on. We're gonna get a little sidetracked here.
Right. But the LeBron RPA is a very important card. It's for so many reasons, but obviously we all want a few things they could have made better, especially with this one. I'm like, dude, you guys been producing cards for that long. Come on, use your brain. Like you already have cards in your same product, same set, same pull rate, whatever. That's game worn. So why the F you didn't freaking put the game worn in the RPA and make it like, oh shit, this is it.
Yeah. That's the only point of frustration. But even taking that consideration, still takes the top spot.
Oh, yeah, 1 million percent. But you see, that's what makes a top 10 list very, very valuable. Like, you know what I mean? One person may value certain thing more than others, like in terms of what we just said. You know what? I don't care if it's game used or not. You know, LeBron wore it. It's good enough for me. It has his auto, his signature, his RPA. I'm done. You know what I mean? Other deeper collectors, like, dude, why isn't it game worn? Come on. You know what I mean? I want to get flawless and all that. So. That's what makes a market, to be frank.
There you go. Now, Shay, you're gonna hate to hear this, but this is the longest episode without a doubt so far. So let's make this shout out of the day very quick. I'll get my shout out. It's gonna go to @patriot_sportscards on Instagram. My man Jeff, huge Celtics fan, mainly a vintage collector. He's got a stash of WNBA cards as well. So a little sneaky play there. But Jeff's a great guy. I had multiple conversations with him. And make sure go give him a follow @patriot_sportscards on Instagram.
Interesting, great choice. I'll definitely check them out. My shout out of the day is Sports Card Investments. I'll spell his name out. It's actually sports underscore card underscore investments. I actually bought for this guy. I actually like him a lot because I think you should definitely go follow him. It's worth the follow. I personally think he's very intelligent and knowledgeable. I've met him in Dallas, I think two or three times, and a year ago or something, I've actually bought stuff from him, and he was very honest in terms of the condition. It was raw cards. A quick shout out to I wish I know his freaking name. I totally forgot. I'm an idiot, but he sold me raw cards. All Lucas, I graded them, all PSA 10s, and I hit a big-ass return on that card. And he was honest. He told me exactly what I was getting. True dude. I met him, and he's legit. So definitely give him a follow. He also – a lot of things that – one thing I like a lot about his page is he gives reasons why what the market is doing and backs it up with facts and thesis and charts. Not his own charts. He'll use other people's charts. So he's not a chartist. I know we all hate those stupid chartist people. Stop showing me fucking charts. But he's showing other people's charts, and he's giving his reasons, and he explains it, and he makes sense. He's successful. I like him. He's local to me, and I vouch for him. I hope he doesn't screw anybody. But
yeah, he's a great guy. I've met him many times, many conversations. Make sure to go follow sports underscore card underscore investments. There you go. All right, everyone. That's going to wrap up today's podcast. Hope you enjoyed kind of a different pace to this different kind of episode, top 10 most important basketball cards of all time. Appreciate everyone for listening. Make sure you subscribe if you haven't already, or leave a rating and on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you thought about this. Let us know if you agree with our list. I guarantee you there's going to be some passionate responses in the YouTube comment section, which I'm excited to read. But yeah, Shay, any last words here?
Last word. I undersold my card. The gold Bowman Sterling is jersey number 35 out of 99. I don't think I mentioned that, did I? If I did mention it, shoot me. This idiot just talks up this shit. But if I didn't, yeah, it's 35. I don't know. Take that one.
All right, everyone. And that's the episode. As usual, Shay pumping his own card at the end. Oh my God. But yeah, next week, huge guest. Stay tuned. Peace out.
We are. By the way, guys, I'll just leave it at that. Next week's guest is going to be a blockbuster, and you may have seen them before, but we are going to be a little different.
All right. We'll leave it there. See everyone. Take care.
Mañana.